Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Four in a row for the Motor City Kitties. Good morning, 97.1. Jim Costa, John Jansen, Heather Park. We've got Gov and Greg behind the glass. John, a 1-0 win for the Tigers.
How about them apples? As quoted last night, hey, you never know what can happen, right?
Right. We're laughing.
We are laughing.
How serious are you taking this? Right, a sweep over the weekend against a bad Reds team, but a win against the Guardians where Cater Montero, look at this, back-to-back starts for him. They've pitched well all season long. That much has been consistent. They don't often win a lot of these one-run games. I think they're 2-22 in games where they score one or fewer runs. The bar is get to 2 runs, get to 3 runs, take advantage of this pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be able to utilize your best tool. And what is the Tigers' best tool?
Pitching.
It's pitching.
Yeah.
And we said it before we came on, moments before, you're only as good as, you know, your streak, your momentum as your next starting pitcher. So Kenta Maeda takes the mound today. So let's see. And he has the ability to go out there and be good. He just hasn't shown that ability consistently this year.
A win today would certainly be eye-opening because you'd win a Kenta Maeda start for the first time in, I don't know.
Yeah, long time.
A long time. He normally serves up a bunch of easy ones. Doesn't have the swing and miss. Doesn't miss bats. Keeps it in the zone. Gets hit hard. And then you end up emptying out the bullpen. But a win today would be eye-opening. Be 5 in a row for the first time since the first 5 games of the season.
That is correct. Yeah, because I saw that they, you know, against Toronto and Pittsburgh, they had a four-game run. And it would be an opportunity to put a nice little streak together because we talked about this. You're finishing up before the All-Star break with 4 against Cleveland and 3 against the Dodgers. Most people thought that was going to be an 0-7 run. Now they have the opportunity to, at worst, to be 1-6. But the fact that they showed the propensity for some offense against Cincinnati. What does that mean? We did something or nothing yesterday. I don't really think that means anything. But then you have a great performance yesterday by a pitcher that's, what, it's his third start, and now you got Maeda, but the nice thing is the rest of the way against the Guardians, you've got Reese Olson, who, all right, that it could be, I think it's better than just a coin flip. It's, you know, what, 51 that he's going to have a good outing. Mm-hmm. You just don't know if there's going to be any run support.
Right.
And then you got Jack Flaherty. And then Scooble against the Dodgers. I think that's going to be one that everybody's going to want to be at because it's here. It's going to be a lot of fun. But your pitching staff, when you look at the rest of the run with 6 games remaining, Olson, Flaherty, Scooble, you're kind of looking at that going, all right, we could go 500 the rest of the way.
Yesterday
is 4 in a row with 3 against the Reds, now 1 against the Guardians. Is that hot? Does that qualify?
What's the line from Major League? It's called a win streak. It's happened before.
Yes.
You know, it just hasn't happened very often for this baseball team. I don't think 4 is the Tigers getting hot, but it is a win streak. And yesterday had the chance to be one of the most frustrating games of a frustrating season because Cater Montero, I don't know how sustainable this is. I'm not going to promise that he's going to round into form as an ace. But you got a young arm who's taking a step forward. Yeah. In the minors, he was not very good. He didn't work deep into games. His walk rate was just atrocious. But people like the swing and miss. Well, you've seen a more mature approach. He's been economical. Yep. He's been throwing strikes. He still gets some swings and misses at the big league level. And they were on the verge of wasting his start. We've seen them waste a Skubal start here or there. We've seen them waste most of Reese Olson this season. And even Jack Flaherty's been the victim of little to no offense. It would have been another frustrating game if they wasted Cater Montero's breakthrough these last couple games. And it was a day where Riley Green hit a couple long fly balls, I think 390 to straightaway center. He had one that hit the chalk line that inexplicably was called foul. It would have been one of the most frustrating games in a frustrating season. And instead, they get the one run. Dickerson had a great call. You heard it in the update where they're looking to turn two. Guy boots the ball at short and you score the only run of the game and you win anyway. It's not a formula for them to win long term, but it avoided what would have been a real frustrating day, and it keeps him on the win streak.
Well, and here it is. Is this, you know, I know we heard, you know, Jake Rogers there and talk about, you know, don't let the Tigers get hot. Can we not just have some fun?
Sure.
Like we talked about at the beginning of the season when they swept the Sox and they started off with five wins and you know, we were excited. Did we anticipate that this was going to be a 100-plus win baseball team? No. But you can enjoy little pockets of time throughout the season because they make those frustrating moments a little bit more palatable.
You said, did we think they'd be a 100-win baseball team? And I smiled because no, we didn't think they'd be a 100-win baseball team. But I went down a rabbit hole yesterday.
Oh, boy.
John, I saw someone on Twitter point out that the Tigers are 43-39 in games where they score at least a run. This team would have a winning record if they scored at least a run per game.
Okay. Above 500.
It made me think, what about when they score two measly runs per game, right? When they score at least two runs per game, the Detroit Tigers record, this is absurd. 41-26. That's a 99 win pace. If this team could score consistently two or more runs per game, not four or five,
right?
Two runs per game, they'd be pacing for 100 wins. 100. 100. If they could score two runs per game, maybe if they'd added two bats in the offseason, we'd be talking about not 100 wins, because I get it. Some nights you're going to be cold. But we'd be talking about a team in the playoff chase, right? If they could score two runs per game.
Well, so we've danced around this topic early on in the season, right?
Yeah.
We had the five runs. If they averaged five runs a game, which is, you know, all those teams that make the playoffs, they average, right, you know, 4.9 to just over five runs a game. Their record was going to be, you know, it was something insane in regards to like 10-1 or
right,
10-2 in the games that they've scored, you know, five runs or more. But then you dumb it down to two runs per game. And now you're looking at it over the course of 162, they could be a 100-win team. And even if they were a 90-win team.
You're in the wild card at the very least.
At the very least.
Yeah. Tom, when you hear that stat, 41-26 when they score at least two runs, your reaction is?
Fake stats. I don't believe it. I honestly was blown away by this last night. And
fake news already.
Yeah, seriously. I'm kidding.
No, I don't.
It's hard to believe that. And it actually tells me that, my goodness, if the offense starts to produce a little bit, is this four-game win streak something or nothing? We did that yesterday, but
right,
the big picture thing we didn't do was the big picture, meaning, is their season still alive?
How many back are they in the wild card this morning?
Seven and a half.
This is the ridiculous thing this makes you do, is you start to look at things like that. But here's the thing.
Seven, sorry.
Okay. Flaherty, we got to make sure his back is good. And then even then, he may get traded. And the responsible thing to do would be to trade Jack Flaherty at the end of this month, right?
What? Okay, so let's go down another rabbit hole. What is going to be the conversation? Are they going to make it difficult? Are they right now, they're seven back. And they still could be, of the wild card spot, I'm not talking about the division, they still could be double digits back because they're they got three more against the Guardians, they've got three more against the Dodgers before they hit the All-Star break. And I mentioned it, most likely they're going to be double digits back of the wild card before the All-Star break. Now, I would love to be wrong, but is this team now going to make the conversation? Are they going to stay within striking range and maybe get to five back of the wild card and bounce back and forth between five and seven so that they get to the end of the month? And then we have to worry about the decision that Scott Harris is going to make. Is he going to sell and try and get some bats for next year or future years? Or are they going to be in the let's go for it mode and not sell anyone?
Yeah, I mean, this is what makes it so tough to get excited. And I'm not telling anybody not to enjoy the win. If you were out at Comerica Park last night, if you're going this week, like you said, maybe you're going to the school bowl start before the All-Star break. I'm not trying to take away any of the joy or any of the fun that you may have with this run or this baseball team. I am talking personally. I have a hard time because, John, they don't score enough runs consistently.
No.
And they're going to trade Jack Flaherty in all likelihood at the trade deadline. It's the right thing to do. He's a rental player. You're not challenging for a playoff spot. So it makes any of the excitement, this idea that okay, they're gonna likely douse themselves before we can even work ourselves into anything.
But, I mean, if we're going to go down that rabbit hole, if they are able to be, let's just say, I mean, I don't know, three back of the wild card at the end of, or as we near the trade deadline, and that is with the opponents that we already mentioned.
Sure.
Coming out of the All-Star break, they've got a seven-game road series, three at Toronto, four at Cleveland. If they're to be able to get to five or three back of the wild card, they're going to have some wins in that stretch. And then, oh, by the way, they've got three against Minnesota, two more against Cleveland. Those are at home, Kansas City. They've got all the division opponents coming out of the break.
If I'm not looking at the wild card more, I'm looking at get the 500 first to take anything serious here. If they're 43 and 48, if they can get to 47 and 50 at the end of this week, I'll at least raise an eyebrow towards after the All-Star break in terms of maybe what he said. Teams do get hot. There are examples of teams that have done this. They don't have to score that much to be good.
Right.
No, that's the one thing I can take here, that if simply, but what's changed since Minnesota? Since they went to Cincinnati, Parker Meadows came up and he energized the lineup into scoring some runs and getting
he's no longer in the lineup.
Exactly. And then they won the school bowl start. Okay. Which is, you expect most times. And last night was a game that they've played 1,000 times this year. They just got lucky and won, and they mustered up the one run.
Yeah, last night
was
a surprise.
But can they survive this week?
Right, so you're asking to get to that record with six games remaining.
It's a 5-2 homestand against the Dodgers and Guardians.
Right, but 4-2 of those that are left.
Yes.
So I guess what we could ask people this morning, and we've talked about this team so many different ways, is when I give you that stat, 41-26. Tom, you're kind of encouraged by it, that if they could score two runs, it's not a high bar for this team to reach. If there's even modest offensive production this week coming out of the All-Star break before the trade deadline, maybe that stat is as disgusting as it is weirdly encouraging for Tigers fans. 41-26 when they score at least two runs. See, because you know what my stance is on it. Scott Harris should be in sports jail. Like, in what world is this acceptable when you have two runs get you in the playoffs? So we look at it very differently, but it's open-ended for you, the Tiger fan. 248-539-9797. We're going to get to a solution to this Bally Sports issue. Mm. It's happening.
That'd be nice.
It's happening in one state. Could it happen here? That's next. It's 97.1.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Great call by Dan. The only run of the game, Tigers win 1-0. How about that? Winning a low-scoring game. Four straight, as Jake Rogers says, don't let the Tigers get hot.
Hey, we'll enjoy every moment that we possibly can.
Your reactions to the stat. The Tigers are 41-26. That's a 99/100 win pace when they score at least two runs. Your reaction to that, are you encouraged because it's such a low bar if they do get hot with this pitching staff? Yeah, quote-unquote, never know. Or are you like me going, it's irresponsible that there's not another bat or two on this team so that they could be tracking for 90 or more wins? Ticket Texter says, Scott Harris sucks. That's all I hear with that stat. Texter says, if Torkelson had started the season like he ended last year, this team, it would make the difference. They would be in the wild card race.
Well, that's a great point. I was going to make that as well in regards to you thought coming out of last year, maybe you thought Spencer Torkelson, that was a bit of a hot streak, but it was a prolonged hot streak. It was the second half of a season. You felt that it finally clicked. And not that he was ever going to be a guy that hit for average, but if he could be a guy that was, I don't know, 240 and hit for power, then I think we're talking about that stat in completely different terms with this pitching staff. It could have only been one bat, and he was already on the roster.
Yeah. Yep. Ticket Texter says, writing like the offense is hot, but the only run they scored was off an error yesterday. Let's slow down, Jake Rogers.
Oh, okay, but it's a win. And the one thing that we can hang our hat on for, you know, four out of the five starts, in terms of the pitching rotation, is that you're going to get a quality start. You're going to get somebody that can go six innings.
That is the obvious takeaway from 41-26, is that they've pitched so absurdly well this season. I know the other side of the coin is they've hit so pedestrian this season, but to be in all of these games, to be within striking distance most starts, because not just Skubal, Flaherty and Olson, and lately it's Montero, and It's the Fetter experience. You develop another arm. You get something out of a guy. They've done such a good job on the mound that if they could only score two runs a game, this team would be in the playoffs.
If they had scored two runs a game, instead of a two-star team, would we be talking about a three-star team? Would Flaherty have been a guy that could have made the All-Star list simply because instead of being 5-5 and being where he's at, he has a couple more wins? And I know that there's more stats that go into it than that, but the perception of whether it's the fan vote or anybody that's not paying attention just looks at the numbers 5-5. You're like, yeah, okay, you're not getting in.
Yeah, and just so people understand, if you Google today, the Tigers are scoring four runs per game, but they're being weighed down by 24 games where they scored zero or one. It's more than a quarter of their games that they've just thrown away, and that's the frustrating part. But the other frustrating part has been some of you have not been able to watch this team or refuse to pay to watch this team.
Yeah.
There is an update on the Bally streaming issue, at least in the state of Texas. The Dallas Stars announced yesterday that they've entered into a 7-year agreement, dropping Bally Sports and partnering with Parent Media Co. Inc. to stream all regional Dallas Stars games free of charge, beginning with the upcoming season. Games will be broadcast on a newly formed Victory Plus app, which is direct-to-consumer, for the fans. Now, Victory Plus is a playoff of they wear the Victory green jerseys.
Right.
So you could call it Hockey Town Plus, or you could bundle in all the Detroit teams. But
Is it only the Stars? Is it have nothing to do with
anybody
the Rangers
else?
Correct.
But I don't know what's going to happen with Bally. Nobody knows what's going to happen with Bally.
Is there
Diamond Sports? Is there a world where these all get piecemealed off under their own free apps? And again, free for how long, right? Eventually, I could see that price going up, but free to start for Dallas Stars fans, the only obstacle is you got to stream it. And for a lot of people, that's not an issue. For some, it would be a roadblock. But John, how do you think this Bally thing ends up sorting out?
I mean, Bally's eventually goes away, and Major League Baseball is going to have to figure this. I think this is a Major League Baseball issue, and it doesn't need to be a you know, a regional issue. It shouldn't be a regional issue. That's the problem with baseball, is it's become a regional sport. And when we talk about being able to sell all of your superstars, this is something that baseball has greatly struggled with in regards to a guy like Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani was when he was with the Angels. Now, he is big enough, and what he is doing is special enough that he is a not just a, you know, coast to coast, north to south, east to west star. He's a global star. But you have other guys that are doing unique and special things that you really only know about in their region because of the regional broadcasts. And I know that there's 162 games. It becomes very difficult to have a you know, Major League Baseball to have complete control of this. But Major League Baseball needs to take control of this, especially now they have the opportunity. This is the quintessential buy low, sell high. Major League Baseball, take over the broadcast, and when everything sorts itself out, now you can go back to, if you're going to go regional, you can have a product that is worth selling.
Yeah, that's the key for baseball, in this case hockey down in Dallas. You want crazy idea. Your fans to watch the games.
Yeah.
Crazy. All right, we got a lot to get to today. Two Grand Slam coming up at 7:25. Less than an hour, your chance to win $2,000. We're going to talk a ton of college football between now and then. But first, Heather, get us caught up. What's going
on? All right. Well, more than 80 Detroit police officers will be deployed on weekends in these new units called neighborhood response teams. And they're going to focus on putting an end to violence at these illegal block parties. Of course, this is all in a response to that shooting that took place over the weekend that left two people dead, dozens of others injured. During a press conference on Monday, Police Chief James White said that more than 100 shell casings were recovered from that crime scene, along with 9 guns. They also found a Glock switch attachment, which they say turns pistols into fully automatic weapons. He also noted that between July 4th through the 7th, there were 27 people shot, 3 fatally at 6 illegal block parties in Detroit. So they really want to create these response teams so that they can put an end to this violence. White and Mayor Mike Duggan plan to target the organizers of these large illegal parties by enforcing city code violations that they say can carry up to 90 days in jail or a $500 fine. They also say that in addition to the neighborhood response teams, they are going to respond to 911 calls about these block parties as priority one runs that are slated for immediate action. So they're going to respond a little bit quicker to these particular calls. So let's hope it works. Yeah. They're confident that this will make a difference, and hopefully it will. Hey, if you're thinking about adding a new pet to your family, now is the perfect time because over 40 Michigan animal shelters are participating in the annual Empty the Shelters event this month, which makes pet adoption more affordable. The fees are lowered to $50 or less. And they also say Michigan shelters are currently at capacity. So it really is the best time to go and, you know, add a little furry friend to the family, if that's what you're thinking about doing. The event has a goal of adopting out 1,200 pets each day.
Wow.
And they're, yeah. When I saw that, I was like, oh, 1,200 pets in total. No. That's each day of the event. There's a whole list of shelters that are participating in this particular event. So it's something great to do if this is what you've been thinking about doing, for sure. Now, of course, really think about it. Don't get a pet unless you've thought about
You don't want it to end back up in the shelter.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, especially around the holidays, Christmas, do that where they're like, oh, this is going to be a great gift, a little puppy. And then they're like, whoa, this is a lot of work.
Especially in summer, because there's a lot of pandemic pets because everybody was home. Summer, your kids are home. And I mean, every parent has heard this. Oh, mom, dad, I'll pick up the poop. I'll help feed the dog. I'll help vacuum. And then, you know, 2 days into it, they don't want any part of it.
Oh, no, they don't. No, they don't. Hey, 5 people were rescued by the U.S. Coast Guard after they were found clinging to a cooler 10 miles off the coast in Lake Erie. Yeah, so the group was out on their boat Saturday morning when they say it was swamped by a wave. They were tossed in the water. Thankfully, one of them was actually able to call 911. They were all wearing life jackets. And, of course, they had that kind of cooler to just kind of
bob hang up and down.
I'm glad
they were all had their life jackets on.
That's
a rarity.
It is. And everybody was rescued. There were no medical issues reported, which is great.
Wear your life jackets.
Yep. You guys, when's the last time you wrote a check?
Yesterday.
Ooh. What about you, you young one?
It's not that long ago. We had some work done at the house with a contractor, so we wrote him a check. But for the most part, no.
God, you guys, I don't even own checks. I don't even have checks in my name. I know I can go get checks, but I don't have checks.
Emily and Brooks are in school, you will find a way. Yes, because there are, whether it's a $7 t-shirt that they have or it's a field trip, it's so much easier than, and here's the thing. You send an envelope with cash to the school.
No, you just can like Venmo the school.
No, you can't. Not every school has that set up. I wish they did because that's what I would do.
I pay my school now, Emily's new school, through Zelle.
Oh. So why do you ask?
Well, because Target is going to stop accepting personal checks as a form of payment.
I'm fine with this at retailers like this because there is nothing more painful than getting in line and sitting behind somebody that is writing a check. Are you kidding me?
And then maybe they stop and balance their checkbook after they write it.
Oh, yeah.
And the worst
part is you can tell, like, they set their phone down next to their checkbook and they could have just used their phone to pay.
Yes. And every other form of payment is still acceptable, but they say, hey, you know what? We're committed to creating an easy and convenient checkout experience. So there you have it.
Long overdue.
It starts on July 15th.
Oh, good for them.
Can't get here soon enough.
I agree.
You cash, your card, all of it's fine. You just don't need to sit there and scribble out a check while everybody's waiting in line.
Yes.
Heather with the news. Coming up next, Michigan football expectations. Let's get into it. It's 97.1. Less than an hour away from your chance at $2,000. Two grand slam on a Tuesday. Countdown is on till college football returns.
I know you want to just get there now. We covered that yesterday.
All right. I was telling you, I have Phil Steele at home. I have Athlon. I have Lindy's. I have what I would call the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Oh, you got the Trinity.
Yes. And I'm thumbing through them. And we're all starting to kind of get that itch for football season. Some of you are more patient than I am. I concede that. But we're all looking to see what Michigan football is going to do in the post-Jim Harbaugh era. They lost a ton of guys to the NFL, ton of guys up front on the offensive line, quarterback, running back, receivers, whatever. What is your expectation for the Michigan Wolverines? And we'll revisit this between now and the kickoff against Fresno State. But here, as the summer starts to turn, where are you at with your expectations? 248-539-9797. And yes, I'm looking at you, John.
Yeah, that's fine. For me, it's 9-3 at worst, 10-2 probably is the best. And I'm not sure where that swing game is. They don't have the benefit of having James Franklin on the schedule, and that's disappointing. It's a great matchup. It's a great environment, but it's also it's a win against James Franklin.
Big game, James.
Yeah. But I look at this, and defensively, I think you're going to see it. Last year's defense was spectacular. This year's defense is going to be, I think, as good, if not better, because up front last year, the benefit of they had up front last year was rotating nine guys through. Now, a lot of those guys are gone, but the best players are back in regards to Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant. I think Derek Moore is set up for a big year. We know what what's his name? The other edge that had the big
Stewart.
Game. Josiah Stewart, the transfer for Coastal Carolina. What he meant to the team last year. And he answered any questions about being not a large individual, he was able to have a huge impact. I think those guys, because they're going to have more reps, are going to have great numbers. And you're looking at a defense that has probably three first-round picks. Last year they had 13 picks, only one first-rounder. This year they're not going to have as many draft picks, but they're going to have higher-end talent. Will Johnson, Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, I think those guys are first-round talents. I mentioned Derek Moore. I think he is a guy that could have a season where he could be talked about in that realm. That's to be determined. Offensively, with Colston Loveland, everybody talks about the best tight end in college football, but the problem is going to be, what are you going offensively, other than Colston Loveland
Bunch of questions.
And Donovan Edwards. Everybody else is going to be new.
Samaj Morgan too, right?
Yes, but he didn't have as much run. He got more at the end of the year and didn't have as much run through the entire season last year. So it's still going to be a developing wide receiver room, and that's probably the biggest question. The other big question, probably more impactful question, is six offensive linemen, your five plus your number one reserve, are no longer on the roster. They're going to be playing on Sundays. Well, one retired. But that's the biggest question. I think in the interior offensive line, you're going to have a really good group. Greg Crippen, probably going to be the center. He's waited his time. He is old school mentality. He was there, and then they brought in Olu and had to wait, had to sit, had to learn. Then last year he thought he was in line for it, and then they bring in Drake Nugent. Again, had to sit, had to learn. Didn't transfer. Giovanni Ohadi is going to be one of the guards. Josh Preeb, the transfer from Northwestern, the other guard. I think interior line, they're going to be just fine, if not better than they – well, I don't want to say better than they were last year because of Keegan and Zinter. But the big question is going to be the tackles.
Yeah.
Well, unproven and just a lot of questions.
The identity of Michigan football, to me, has been the offensive line lately, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's what helped them break through and beat Ohio State three straight seasons.
Two Joe Moore Award-winning offensive lines. Last year, you could have debated it. They went out to Washington. Proved we know it. What they did. Yeah,
yeah, they proved it. But you lose six guys, all the starters and the swing tackle.
Yeah.
So I think that's concerning, especially when you don't have a quarterback with the game reps. So while Orji, I think they'll lean on, if he's the starter, him in the run game, the extra blocker, don't turn the ball over. It's okay if we punt. We've got a great defense. You worry about in the biggest games when the bullets start flying for a guy who's not a traditional proven drop back passer and will have potentially a shaky protection, more shaky than it's been in Ann Arbor. You got to at least concede that point.
Oh, yeah.
So when Michigan looks at their schedule, there's three games that I circle. It's Texas, it's Oregon, and it's Ohio State.
Nailed it.
You said 9-3, 10-2. You got to win one of the three to go 10-2. If you go 10-2, you're in the college football playoff unquestioned. You go 9-3, you leave the door open. You never know what's going to happen on the bubble. It's funny we talk about 9 versus 10, 9 wins versus 10 wins. That's kind of what the over-under says. It's 9.5 in Vegas. To make the playoff is -110 on one book, +115 on another. They are on the edge of whether they win 10 games and make the playoff or they win 9 games, underachieve, and miss the playoff. But that's what we're asking right now is where is the bar for Sharon Moore in year one? What are the expectations for Michigan in the post-Harbaugh era? 248-539-9797. John, to me, part of the appeal of promoting Sharon Moore was that you minimize drop-off. So I think the expectation has to be that you win one of your three big games, you get to 10-2, and you get in the college football playoff. If they were to fall short, it doesn't mean Sharon was a bad hire, but it means you lost the momentum that I thought they were going to keep when they promoted him.
Sure, but I think 9 wins could still get you in the playoffs. And we'll that's an opportunity to debate come November and December. Will 9 wins get you in? I think with the strength of the SEC and the strength of the Big Ten, I do believe 9 wins get you in, but it depends on, okay, do you beat Oregon, but then you have a slip up against a lesser team. Now all of a sudden
That's a blemish.
It's a blemish, and it's one that may be hard to recover from. If you beat Texas, but again, you lose to a lesser team, it's going to be how consistent is this team? And one thing that we do know about Sharon Moore is in big games, we saw it against Penn State, he has the ability on game day to be a good game day coach. We saw it against Ohio State. He has the ability on game days, even the trap game of Maryland last year, that was a big game because it would have been one that, hey, everybody could have been looking past. He found a way on game day to be able to make the calls, the decisions, hey, we're going to run this ball from the mid-second quarter for the rest of the game against Penn State. That's a tough call to make. But he did it as coordinator and as head coach. The issue was going to be, obviously, recruiting, developing a quarterback, and developing an offensive line all at the same time. We know he can do the offensive line. He's done it. But now the challenge isn't necessarily the talent. It's You could have very talented guys. It's getting that unit to play together as five and being able to do it quickly, because Fresno is no give me. They're not, you know, they're not a top 20 team, top 25 team. It's going to be a bigger challenge than anything that they had in the you know, I call it the preseason last year. But you got to be ready. You got to hit the ground running against Texas.
Yeah, immediately in week two, you get that big televised game, big noon kickoff against the top five team Texas in all likelihood, playoff team a year ago. They bring back Ewers and most of their offensive line. It's one of the marquee games on the schedule. Sharon Moore, O-line guy, got to keep the O-line humming, got to keep this team at least in the playoff. 10-2 to me is the expectation for Michigan. Win one of those three big red letter marquee games, two of which are in Ann Arbor. The Texas and Oregon games are both in Ann Arbor. Let's get to Rico. You're on 97.1.
Hey, guys. Happy Tuesday. I think this team and Sharon Moore definitely have the opportunity to go undefeated again. I'm going to trust in this defense. I think, like you guys said, I think they have a chance at being maybe even better than last year's. I think what it comes down to is I got to see Orji throw. That's what I'm just a little bit worried about. We've been producing O-linemen like an O-lineman factory, so I'm not really worried about that. It's can Orji make the throws, and I'm not worried about our offensive weapons. We have Tyler Morris, Samaj Morgan, Colson Loveland. We still have Khalil Mowings. I think this offense can be really good. It's just I got to see Orji throw that football. But other than that, I'm not scared by any of these teams. Most of them we play at home anyway. I think the biggest game is just going to be Ohio State and Oregon, because I think we're going to handle Texas, but we gotta see if Orji can throw that football.
That's the challenge. It's early in the season where maybe you haven't seen him really stand in and deliver pressured throws.
But there's also going to be another element to this offense. We always wanted to see it more with JJ at quarterback, and that is running the ball, being more decisive in the RPOs, in the read options. With Orji, that's going to be a much bigger part. He is going to gain more yards on the ground. They're going to ask him to do more on the ground. And then it will be, it's not just him throwing the ball, but it is who he's going to be throwing the ball to. Your biggest target, your best target is Colston Loveland. The wide receivers, other than Samaj Morgan, I think Fred Moore is going to be good, but he is what, 5'12"? 6 foot, 5'11".
The more we talk about this.
They're just not big guys, 5'12". That's a stony moment right there.
Oh, boy. It's just, he's what, 5'12"?
I thought I heard that, and then nobody else reacted at first, and I'm like, wait, what?
I'll be the first one to call that one out.
I wish I was 5'12".
So does Colin.
No.
4'12".
248-539-9797.
He's 420.
Only when he's playing frisbee.
Disc golf.
Disc. It's disc. It's not frisbee.
Frisbee makes it so much more trivial, right?
Confrontational. Colin's going to be hitting my phone here in a minute.
What did you say
watch
about
out
me?
John
frisbee.
Out.
He's not going to be worried about the 420. He's more worried about the frisbee.
What did you say to me? And then John's going to look all the way down at him and go, oh, you heard what I said. All right, Michigan football talk and whatever else. It's 97.1. Things we learned this morning. Michigan's biggest weakness, all those 5'12 receivers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Your stony moment.
Yeah, that was a big one.
It's 97.1.
Big one. And I'll say this too. I would love for, it's kind of ironic that Rico was the name of the caller that was calling in saying that Michigan should, could go undefeated. Could they? Sure. Will they? No. And I just don't see it happening with a brand new offensive line. It basically a brand new offense other than Donovan Edwards, who, let's all say it as it is, even though Blake Corum was there, Donovan early on in the season last year, and he talked about it. I thought he did a great job of handling the questions. He's grown up a lot since he's been in Ann Arbor in terms of how he handles the media, what he talks about, how he says it. But big games, he showed up. Other opportunities, he was always looking for that big moment. He was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, and that he identified that as, I thought every single run should go 85, 75, 60.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The Gel Flex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the Gel Flex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Less than an hour away from your chance at $2,000. Two grand slam on a Tuesday. Countdown is on till college football returns.
I know, John, you want to just get there now. We covered that yesterday.
All right. I was telling you, I have Phil Steele at home. I have Athlon. I have Lindy's. I have what I would call the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Oh, you got the Trinity.
Yes. And I'm thumbing through them. And we're all starting to kind of get that itch for football season. Some of you are more patient than I am. I concede that. But we're all looking to see what Michigan football is going to do in the post-Jim Harbaugh era. They lost a ton of guys to the NFL, ton of guys up front on the offensive line, quarterback, running back, receivers, whatever. What is your expectation for the Michigan Wolverines? And we'll revisit this between now and the kickoff against Fresno State. But here, as the summer starts to turn, where are you at with your expectations? 248-539-9797. And yes, I'm looking at you, John.
Yeah, that's fine. It's for me, it's 9-3 at worst, 10-2 probably is the best. And I'm not sure where that swing game is. They don't have the benefit of having James Franklin on the schedule, and that's disappointing. It's a great matchup. It's a great environment, but it's also it's a win against James Franklin.
Big game, James.
Yeah. But I look at this, and defensively, I think you're going to see it. Last year's defense was spectacular. This year's defense is going to be, I think, as good, if not better, because up front last year, the benefit of they had up front last year was rotating nine guys through. Now, a lot of those guys are gone, but the best players are back in regards to Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant. I think Derek Moore is set up for a big year. We know what... what's his name? The other edge that had the big
Stewart.
Josiah Stewart, the transfer for Coastal Carolina. What he meant to the team last year, and he answered any questions about it. Being not a large individual, he was able to have a huge impact. I think those guys, because they're going to have more reps, are going to have great numbers. And you're looking at a defense that has probably three first round picks. Last year they had 13 picks, only one first rounder. This year they're not going to have as many draft picks, but they're going to have higher end talent. Will Johnson, Mason Graham, Kenneth Grant, I think those guys are first round talents. I mentioned Derek Moore. I think he is a guy that could have a season where he could be talked about in that realm. That's to be determined. Offensively, with Colston Loveland, everybody talks about the best tight end in college football, but the problem is going to be, what are you going offensively, other than Colston Loveland
and
Donovan Edwards? Everybody else is going to be new.
Samaj Morgan too, right?
Yes, but he didn't have as much run. He got more at the end of the year and didn't have as much run through the entire season last year. So it's still going to be a developing wide receiver room, and that's probably the biggest question. The other big question, probably the more impactful question, is six offensive linemen. Your five plus your number one reserve are no longer on the roster. They're going to be playing on Sundays. Well, one retired. But that's the biggest question. I think in the interior offensive line, you're going to have a really good group. Greg Crippen, probably going to be the center. He's waited his time. He is old school mentality. He was there, and then they brought in Olu. and had to wait, had mm-hmm. to sit, had to learn. Then last year he thought he was in line for it, and then they bring in Drake Nugent. Again, had to sit, had to learn. Didn't transfer. Giovanni Ohadi is going to be one of the guards. Josh Preeb, the transfer from Northwestern, the other guard. I think interior line, they're going to be just fine, if not better than they – well, I don't want to say better than they were last year because of Keegan and Zinter. But the big question is going to be the tackles.
Yeah.
Unproven and just a lot of questions.
The identity of Michigan football, to me, has been the offensive line lately, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's what helped them break through and beat Ohio State three straight seasons.
Two Joe Moore Award-winning offensive lines. Last year, you could have debated it. They went out to Washington. Proved we know it. What they did. Yeah,
yeah, they proved it. But you lose six guys, all the starters and the swing tackle.
Yeah.
So I think that's concerning, especially when you don't have a quarterback with the game reps. So while Orji, I think they'll lean on if he's the starter, him in the run game, the extra blocker, don't turn the ball over. It's okay if we punt. We've got a great defense. You worry about in the biggest games when the bullets start flying for a guy who's not a traditional proven drop back passer and will have potentially a shaky protection, more shaky than it's been in Ann Arbor. You got to at least concede that point.
Oh, yeah.
So when Michigan looks at their schedule, there's three games that I circle. It's Texas, mm-hmm. it's Oregon, mm-hmm. and it's Ohio State.
Nailed it.
You said 9-3, 10-2. You got to win one of the three to go 10-2. If you go 10-2, you're in the college football playoff unquestioned. You go 9-3, you leave the door open. You never know what's going to happen on the bubble. It's funny we talk about 9 versus 10, 9 wins versus 10 wins. That's kind of what the over-under says. It's 9.5 in right. Vegas. To make the playoff is minus 110 on one book, plus 115 on another. They are on the edge of whether they win 10 games and make the playoff or they win 9 games, underachieve, and miss the playoff. But that's what we're asking right now is where is the bar for Sharon Moore in year one? What are the expectations for Michigan in the post-Harbaugh era? 248-539-9797. John, to me, part of the appeal of promoting Sharon Moore was that you minimize drop-off. So I think the expectation has to be that you win one of your three big games, mm-hmm. you get to 10-2, and you get in the college football playoff. If they were to fall short, it doesn't mean Sharon was a bad hire, but it means you lost the momentum that I thought they were going to keep when they promoted him.
Sure, but I think 9 wins could still get you in the playoffs. And we'll, that's an opportunity to debate come November and December. Will 9 wins get you in? I think with the strength of the SEC and the strength of the Big Ten, I do believe 9 wins get you in, but it depends on, okay, do you beat Oregon,
yeah.
but then you have a slip up against a lesser team. Now all of a sudden it's...
That's a blemish.
It's a blemish, and it's one that may be hard to recover from. If you beat Texas, but again, you lose to a lesser team, it's going to be how consistent is this team? And one thing that we do know about Sharon Moore is in big games, we saw it against Penn State, he has the ability on game day to be a good game day coach. We saw it against Ohio State. He has the ability on game days, even the trap game of Maryland last year, that was a big game because it would have been one that, hey, everybody could have been looking past. He found a way on game day to be able to make the calls, the decisions, hey, we're going to run this ball from the mid-second quarter for the rest of the game against Penn State. That's a tough call to make. But he did it as coordinator and as head coach. The issue was going to be, obviously, recruiting, developing a quarterback, and developing an offensive line all at the same time. We know he can do the offensive line. He's done it. But now it's the challenge isn't necessarily the talent. It's you could have very talented guys. It's getting that unit to play together as five and being able to do it quickly. Because Fresno is no give me. They're not, you know, they're not a top 20 team, top 25 team. It's going to be a bigger challenge than anything that they had in the I call it the preseason last year. But you got to be ready. You got to hit the ground running against Texas.
Yeah, immediately in week two, you get that big televised game, big noon kickoff against the top five team Texas in all likelihood.
Oh, yeah.
Playoff team a year ago. They bring back Ewers and most of their offensive line. It's one of the marquee games on the schedule. Sharon Moore, O-line guy, got to keep the O-line humming, got to keep this team at least in the playoff. 10-2 to me is the expectation for Michigan. Win one of those three big red letter marquee games, two of which are in Ann Arbor. The Texas and Oregon games are both in Ann Arbor. Let's get to Rico. You're on 97.1.
Hey guys, happy Tuesday. I think this team and Sherrone Moore definitely have the opportunity to go undefeated again. I'm going to trust in this defense. I think, like you guys said, I think they have a chance of being maybe even better than last year's. I think what it comes down to is I got to see Orji throw. That's what I'm just a little bit worried about. We've been producing O-linemen like an O-lineman factory, so I'm not really worried about that. It's can Orji make the throws? And I'm not worried about our offensive weapons. We have Tyler Morris, Samaj Morgan, Colson Loveland. We still have Khalil Mowings. I think this offense can be really good. It's just I got to see Orji throw that football. But other than that, I'm not scared by any of these teams. Most of them we play at home anyway. I think the biggest game is just going to be Ohio State and Oregon, because I think we're going to handle Texas, but we gotta see if Orji can throw that football.
That's the challenge. It's early in the season where maybe you haven't seen him really stand in and deliver pressured throws.
But there's also going to be another element to this offense. We always wanted to see it more with JJ at quarterback, and that is running the ball, being more decisive in the RPOs, in the read options. With Orji, that's going to be a much bigger part. He is going to gain more yards on the ground. They're going to ask him to do more on the ground. And then it's not just him throwing the ball, but it is who he's going to be throwing the ball to. Your biggest target, your best target, is Colston Loveland. The wide receivers, other than Samaj Morgan, I think Fred Moore is going to be good, but he is what, 5'12"? 6 foot, 5'11".
The more we talk about this.
They're just not big guys, 5'12". That's a stony moment right there.
Oh, boy. He's what, 5'12"?
I thought I heard that, and then nobody else reacted at first, and I'm like, wait, what?
I'll be the first one to call that one out.
I wish I was 5'12".
So does Colin.
No.
4'12".
248-539-9797.
He's 420.
Only when he's playing frisbee.
Disc golf.
Disc. It's disc. It's not frisbee.
Frisbee makes it so much more trivial, right?
Confrontational. Colin's going to be hitting my phone here in a minute.
What did you say about me?
John
frisbee. He's not going to be worried about the 420. He's more worried about the frisbee.
What did you say to me? Then John's going to look all the way down at him and go, oh, you heard what I said. All right, Michigan football talk and whatever else. It's 97.1. Things we learned this morning. Michigan's biggest weakness, all those 5'12 receivers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Your stony moment.
Yeah, that was a big one.
It's 97-1.
Big one. And I'll say this too. I would love for, it's kind of ironic that Rico was the name of the caller that was calling in saying that Michigan should, could go undefeated. Could they? Sure. Will they? No. And I just don't see it happening with a brand new offensive line. It basically a brand new offense other than Donovan Edwards, who, let's all say it as it is, even though Blake Corum was there, Donovan early on in the season last year, and he talked about it. I thought he did a great job of handling the questions. He's grown up a lot since he's been in Ann Arbor in terms of how he handles the media, what he talks about, how he says it. But big games, he showed up. Other opportunities, he was always looking for that big moment. He was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, and that he identified that as, I thought every single run should go 85, 75, 65 for a touchdown, and he wasn't looking for that 6 or 7 yard gain. Now, I think the perspective's changed a little bit, but he's also going to be running behind a much different offensive line.
Yeah, I think it's not like, oh, you got one or two pieces up front you're retooling. It's the entire offensive line, the nucleus, the engine that made this team back-to-back-to-back Big Ten champs.
Miles Hinton is back, and he had some playing time last year. So they do have some experience. Josh Preeb coming in, it's not like he doesn't have experience. Giovanni Elhadi's got experience, but they don't have experience together.
It's not the strength that it was
there's no question.
Over the last 3 years where they were the dominant team in the Big Ten, 3 straight years champions. So now you go, okay, well, you lose a little bit of what made you great, and then you throw in the question marks at quarterback. Can you win dropping back to pass in your three big games this year with an unproven O-line and an unproven quarterback? That's the question mark for Michigan, and it's why a team that otherwise has a great defense and returns, you know, the nucleus of their coaching staff with Sharon Moore being kind of the guy that keeps everything,
yeah,
you know, together. It's what holds them back is the questions offensively. So I looked up, and it's, John, it's way too early, the point spread for Michigan football in those three big games.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State. Against Texas, they're 3.5-point underdogs.
Okay.
Against Oregon, they're 3.5-point underdogs. At the Horseshoe in Columbus, they are 9.5-point underdogs. They're going to have to upset one of those teams to get to 10 wins to yep, safely secure a playoff spot. I think that should be the expectation for Sharon Moore, is that you are able to rebuild your offensive line and keep your team together, because the reason you were promoted is to do that, to pull the line together, to keep the program in tip-top shape, to beat at least one. I know their expectations, we want to beat everybody we play. Beat at least one of those teams, two of which are at home. You're a 10-win team. If you lose all three, you would not have a marquee win. You'd be at 9-3. You could still get in off of the brand and the block M and the reputation, but if you're the third or even the fourth best team in the Big Ten, which is where Phil Steele has them, is the fourth best team in the Big, yep, Ten, that's not good enough to me.
Well, it may be good enough for the playoff committee, but to your point, yeah, it's not good enough for me either.
Right.
And so it's what is good enough for you, what is good enough for me, what is good enough for the alumni base and the fans. It may be, you know, we may be talking about something that doesn't matter when it comes to actually the playoff committee, because I think it's, yes, there is value in the brand. And we've seen that played out over the years in terms of bowl selections and all that stuff. But when you talk about the strength of the SEC, the strength of the Big Ten, if you only have one representative from the Big 12, because Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC now, which makes them even stronger.
Yep.
Oregon, USC, while they're not, I don't think they're a great team. Defensively, they're going to struggle. Obviously, they're replacing Caleb Williams. They're still a huge brand coming into the Big Ten, and a win over SEC will matter. A win over Oregon will matter. They're going to Washington, and Washington has been completely dismantled from last,
yes,
year. But all of those things do matter when you talk about college football playoffs.
The 12 teams, we know there will be six given conference champions. We figure the runner-up in the SEC and the Big Ten are mortal locks, so now we're at eight.
Well, there's four given conference champions. The top four, if the power four get one, and then the highest ranked group of five. So there's five.
I thought they were doing six and six. Did I?
No, because the Pac-12 no longer exists.
Okay, so we know there's five gimme spots.
Yeah.
You're going to get at least two with the runner-up, with the Big Ten champ,
yeah,
and the SEC runner-ups. So that's seven, right, if I'm, mm-hmm, doing the math correctly. We probably give them three teams. So throw another two. That's nine. Do you get the runner-up from the Big 12 or,
no,
the ACC? One of the two potentially to get to 10.
Possibly the ACC,
is Notre
but
Dame,
I don't think,
stealing a spot. You get my
right,
point is, don't leave it up to chance. I can't believe I'm,
I
saying
agree,
this in July. Don't leave it up to chance where you're the fourth best team in the Big Ten or the fourth best team in the SEC, and we got to,
sure,
go. But they played a tough schedule. But did you beat any of the good teams? And that's,
well,
why
that's
if Michigan
question,
beats Texas, that goes a long way. If they beat Oregon or Ohio State, it goes a long way.
And right now, Sharon Moore has a resume of being able to go into big games and win, but they were favored in those games. To continue your, you know, what people think about you is, at some point you're going to have to beat a team that nobody thought you should beat. And whether it's a 3.5-point dog to Texas or a 3.5 dog, you know, point dog to Oregon, you're going to have to beat one of those teams, to your point.
Texter says, my expectation for Sharon Moore in year one, at least 10 wins, play in the Big Ten championship. Anything short is a failed season, especially with the amount of NFL talent on this roster. Another one says, championship programs don't lower expectations. Even if Jim had stayed, this is at least a 9 or a 10 win team. Another one says, it comes down to quarterback play. If Orji can have the same output as McNamara in 2021, this is at least a 10-2 football team, if not better.
All right, so the three underdog games, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, who has the better defense in each of those three matchups?
Ohio State.
So Ohio State has the better defense than Michigan. Does Oregon or Texas?
No, I don't
not
think
Texas,
so.
Not Texas, not after the guys they lost up front of the D-line.
That's where I just think, like, to me, Texas is the game they win.
Okay,
but you're giving a ton of respect to Texas for last year. How come you're not giving a ton of respect to Michigan's defense? They're coming in here.
I didn't tell you who's winning and who's losing the games. So no one's disrespecting anybody, but if we'll play your game, who has the worst quarterback of those four
games? Michigan does.
Okay. Who has the least proven offensive line? Texas brings back, I think, four or five starters. Yeah. Oregon brings back both tackles. Ohio State, say what you want about their offensive line. Some of the pieces are back, at least. So the worst O-line and the worst quarterback, or the least proven,
right,
is Michigan, which is a huge part of football.
A great unknown there, too. And but when John, the former offensive lineman, says the interior line is going to be just fine, makes me feel a lot better, especially when you have a dual threat QB, you know, with RPO QB with Edwards, who has big playability going running right up the gut. You know, I'm buying in a little bit.
But here's the other thing is, what do we know about Oregon? I think they're the most prepared to come into the Big Ten, and maybe of conference expansion, going back even to Penn State. They're the most prepared to come into the Big Ten. But what happened to them last year? They got out-physicaled by a team that we didn't think was possible twice by Washington.
248-539-9797. One more says it all comes down to how well they advance scout for the upcoming season. You knew we were going to get that.
Sure.
All right, 7 o'clock hour. We got the two Grand Slam coming up at 725. I want your help. I want to crowdsource something. It's next, 97.1. Things we learned this morning. Michigan's biggest weakness, all those 5'12 receivers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Your Stoney moment.
Yeah, that was a big one.
It's 97.1.
Big, big one. And I'll say this too. I would love for, it's kind of ironic that Rico was the name of the caller that was calling in saying that Michigan should, you know, could go undefeated. Could they? Sure. Will they? No. And I just don't see it happening with a brand new offensive line. It basically a brand new offense other than Donovan Edwards, who, let's all, you know, say it as it is, even though Blake Corum was there, Donovan, early on in the season last year, and he talked about it. I thought he did a great job of handling the questions. He's grown up a lot since he's been in Ann Arbor in terms of how he handles the media, what he talks about, how he says it. But big games, he showed up. Other opportunities, he was always looking for that big moment. He was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, and that he identified that as, I thought every single run should go 85, 75, 65 for a touchdown. And he wasn't looking for that 6 or 7 yard gain. Now, I think the perspective's changed a little bit, but he's also beginning to be running behind a much different offensive line.
Yeah, I think it's not like, oh, you got one or two pieces up front you're retooling. It's the entire offensive line, the nucleus, the engine that made this team back-to-back-to-back Big Ten champs.
Miles Hinton is back, and he had some playing time last year. So they do have some experience. Josh Preeb coming in, it's not like he doesn't have experience. Giovanni Elhadi's got experience, but they don't have experience together.
It's not the strength that it was
there's no question.
Over the last 3 years where they were the dominant team in the Big Ten, three straight years champions. So now you go, okay, well, you lose a little bit of what made you great, and then you throw in the question marks at quarterback. Can you win dropping back to pass in your three big games this year with an unproven O-line and an unproven quarterback? That's the question mark for Michigan, and it's why a team that otherwise has a great defense and returns, you know, the nucleus of their coaching staff, with Sharon Moore being kind of the guy that keeps everything you know, together, it's what holds them back is the questions offensively. So I looked up, and it's way too early, the point spread for Michigan football in those three big games.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, Oregon, and Ohio State. Against Texas, they're 3.5-point underdogs.
Okay.
Against Oregon, they're 3.5-point underdogs. At the Horseshoe in Columbus, they are 9.5-point underdogs. They're going to have to upset one of those teams to get to 10 wins to safely secure a playoff spot. I think that should be the expectation for Sharon Moore, is that You were able to rebuild your offensive line and keep your team together, because the reason you were promoted is to do that, to pull the line together, to keep the program in tip-top shape, to beat at least one. I know their expectations, we want to beat everybody we play. Beat at least one of those teams, two of which are at home. You're a 10-win team. If you lose all three, you would not have a marquee win. You'd be at 9-3. You could still get in off of the brand and the block M and the reputation, but if you're the third or even the fourth best team in the Big Ten, which is where Phil Steele has them, is the fourth best team in the Big Ten, that's not good enough to me.
Well, it may be good enough for the playoff committee, but to your point, it's not good enough for me either.
Right.
And so it's what is good enough for you, what is good enough for me, what is good enough for the alumni base and the fans. It may be... You know, we may be talking about something that doesn't matter when it comes to actually the playoff committee, because I think it's, yes, there is value in the brand. And we've seen that played out over the years in terms of bowl selections and all that stuff. But when you talk about the strength of the SEC, the strength of the Big Ten, if you only have one representative from the Big 12, because Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC now, which makes them even stronger.
Yep.
Oregon, USC, while they're not, I don't think they're a great team. Defensively, they're going to struggle. Obviously, they're replacing Caleb Williams. They're still a huge brand coming into the Big Ten, and a win over SEC will matter. A win over Oregon will matter. They're going to Washington, and Washington has been completely dismantled from last
year.
But all of those things do matter when you talk about college football playoffs.
The 12 teams, we know there will be six given conference champions. We figure the runner-up in the SEC and the Big Ten are mortal locks, so now we're at eight.
Well, there's four given conference champions. The top four, if the power four get one, and then the highest ranked group of five. So there's five.
I thought they were doing six and six. Did I?
No, because the Pac-12 no longer exists.
Okay, so we know there's five gimme spots.
Yeah.
You're going to get at least two with the runner-up, with the Big Ten champ and the SEC runner-ups. So that's seven, right, if I'm doing the math correctly. We probably give them three teams. So throw another two. That's nine. Do you get the runner-up from the Big 12 or the ACC? One of the two, potentially, to get to 10.
Possibly the ACC,
is Notre
but
Dame
I don't think...
stealing a spot? You get my right. Point is, don't leave it up to chance. I can't believe I'm saying this in July. Don't leave it up to chance where you're the fourth best team in the Big Ten or the fourth best team in the SEC, and we got to go. But they played a tough schedule. But did you beat any of the good teams? And that's why,
that's
if Michigan
question.
Beats Texas, that goes a long way. If they beat Oregon or Ohio State, it goes a long way.
And right now, Sherrill Moore has a resume of being able to go into big games and win, but they were favored in those games. To continue your, you know, what people think about you is, at some point you're going to have to beat a team that nobody thought you should beat. And whether it's a 3.5 point dog to Texas or a 3.5 dog, you know, point dog to Oregon, you're going to have to beat one of those teams, to your point.
Texter says, my expectation for Sherrill Moore in year one, at least 10 wins, play in the Big Ten championship. Anything short is a failed season, especially with the amount of NFL talent on this roster. Another one says, championship programs don't lower expectations. Even if Jim had stayed, this is at least a 9 or a 10 win team. Another one says, it comes down to quarterback play. If Orji can have the same output as McNamara in 2021, this is at least a 10-2 football team, if not better.
All right, so the three underdog games, Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, who has the better defense in each of those three matchups?
Ohio State.
So Ohio State has the better defense than Michigan? Does Oregon or Texas?
No, I don't
think
Texas, so.
Not Texas, not after the guys they lost up front of the D-line.
That's where I just think, like, to me, Texas is the game they win.
Okay, but
you're giving a ton of respect to Texas for last year. How come you're not giving a ton of respect to Michigan's defense? They're coming in here.
I didn't tell you who's winning and who's losing the games. So no one's disrespecting anybody. But if we'll play your game, who has the worst quarterback of those four games?
Michigan does.
Okay. Who has the least proven offensive line? Texas brings back, I think, four or five starters. Yeah. Oregon brings back both tackles. Ohio State, say what you want about their offensive line, some of the pieces are back at least. So the worst O-line and the worst quarterback, or the least proven,
right,
is Michigan, which is a huge part of football.
A great unknown there, too. And but when John, the former offensive lineman, says the interior line is going to be just fine, makes me feel a lot better, especially when you have a dual threat QB, you know, with RPO QB with Edwards, who has big playability running right up the gut. You know, I'm buying in a little bit.
But here's the other thing. is what do we know about Oregon? I think they're the most prepared to come into the Big Ten, and maybe of conference expansion, going back even to Penn State, they're the most prepared to come into the Big Ten. But what happened to them last year? They got out-physicaled by a team that we didn't think was possible, twice, by Washington.
248-539-9797. One more says it all comes down to how well they advance scout for the upcoming season. You knew we were going to get that.
Sure.
All right, 7 o'clock hour. We got the two Grand Slam coming up at 7:25. I want your help. I want to crowdsource something. It's next, 97.1.